behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benson.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Ben, we've got a topic that is really, if you want to get really technical about it, it's part two.
Yeah. This is a listener suggestion from one of our frequent writers, right?
Yeah, Robert S., which we talked about in the Legends Cars podcast. And I did misspeak there. It is Legends Cars.
Yep.
And Robert suggested in that podcast we talk about dwarf cars. And my assumption is that today's topic is where he was really going with this thing. I think he really wanted to hear about dwarf car cruisers instead of dwarf car racing.
Mm-hmm.
And we covered dwarf car racing in the first episode months ago. It seems like it was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
And now we're going to kind of make good on the whole promise to Robert S. To cover dwarf cars by covering dwarf car cruisers, which I think everybody's going to find interesting because these things are fascinating, Ben.
Yeah, and I wonder if we have any listeners who haven't heard about this before. If you haven't, you are in for a treat, ladies and gentlemen, especially if you're a fan of classic cars, the same way that Scott and I are. You know, we're both fans of these.
So. Fans of these, fans of classic cars in general, mm-hmm. fans of everything about dwarf cars, racing, all that. It all comes into one story here with the dwarf car cruisers, and it has a lot to do with a guy named Ernie Adams that we're going to talk about, and of course it has all to do with Ernie Adams, really.
Yeah.
As did dwarf car racing, and let's start at the beginning, Ben. How about that? I mean, we don't need to go into a full recap of, you know, the whole dwarf car racing history or anything like that, but Ernie had a place in dwarf car racing history mm-hmm. that we do need to cover because he's really the originator of the whole thing.
Right, yeah. Ernie and a guy named Darren Schmaltz are the founders, I guess it'd be fair to call them, of dwarf car racing, although it wasn't really called a dwarf car until the 80s. The first dwarf car comes along in 1965, right?
Yeah, that's right. He built one car that was kind of an oddball car. In that, you know, there were decades between when the first one was produced and the second one was produced. So I tell you what, let's just kind of go through Ernie Adams. And I know this sounds like history, but it's going to go quick. Okay. I'm going to say Ernie Adams' life, but really we're just breaking it down into a way that I saw it laid out on his website, which is, I think there's one called Dwarf Car Promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one called Dwarf Car Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find, you know, those online, just a simple keyword search, and you can find all this information there, but I'll kind of lay it out for you quickly. I just kind of cut to the chase on this one, really.
All right.
So in the early years, Ernie came from he had a long-time fascination with cars, which started in grade school. And he built his first wooden car, which was really just kind of a crate box with the steering wheel and, you know, I guess he had peanut butter jar lids for taillights. You know, that kind of pull-push type roadster that he had his mom dragging him around town in this thing when he was really young in grade school.
Mm.
And I guess the family, Ben, this is kind of an interesting little side note. The family lived near the junkyard, the town junkyard.
Yeah.
And they kind of learned that, hey, you know what, some of this stuff isn't all that bad. Let's take that and we can sell it in a garage sale or whatever, and we can reuse some of it, repurpose it. And Ernie learned these really valuable skills by doing that. And he learned that, you know, I can make something out of nothing, really. Make something out of what other people call trash. I can make something that people really want or what I really want. And not only that, they sold things to make they would like gather things from this junkyard and they would make their own things. They would sell them. They would use it to raise money to create, to get Christmas money for the year.
Sure.
It was a very purposeful, I don't know how better to say that, Ben. Maybe they were able to take something or take nothing and make something out of it.
It was sort of a side business for them for a while. And I think I'm really glad that you mentioned the stuff about Christmas because it's important to understand that for Ernie and his family, when Ernie was growing up, this was, I'll say maybe this was 50% fun and a hobby, but it was also a necessity for them economically.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Depression era, you know, and there's a lot of hard times, and the family's growing up, he's growing up in this family in Harvard, Nebraska, so it's Midwest America, you know, typical story, I guess. You know, the family fell in difficult times, they make do with what they can, and this is something that he was able to do, is able to make things out of nothing, really.
It's also very important to note, this will come up later in our story, this is where Ernie first cuts his teeth in fabrication and bending and shaping metal.
Exactly, exactly. And this kind of led him to, let's skip ahead just a little bit.
Okay.
So, you know, he's got all this background, right? And he creates his first dwarf car, which is it was built in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got some pretty good notes on this one. And we won't go into in-depth as on other cars as we do in this one. But
okay.
His first dwarf car, which is kind of an oddball car because,
yeah.
Again, it was built in 1965. It was a 1928 Chevy two-door sedan. And the term really didn't come until 1980, as you mentioned, I think.
Yeah.
But this car that they call the Grandpa Dwarf now, because it's been renamed the Grandpa Dwarf because it's the first, of course.
Right, yeah. And
the patriarch.
And he worked on this for years, for about 3 years, if you start counting from when he began gathering the materials, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It goes back to 1962.
Mm-hmm.
He started pulling stuff. And when we say pulling stuff, you guys, we're literally talking about finding whatever scrap he could.
Yeah, and here's just an example of what he used. Now, he used an 18-horsepower Wisconsin engine for the motor, because you can't obviously put a 1928 Chevy motor into this. It's a scaled-down classic. It doesn't say exactly what scale. Now, we know that the dwarf cars, the Legends cars, you know, the ones that we see racing,
right.
Those are 5/8 scale replicas of, like, 30s and 40s cars. But I don't know if this car is specifically 5/8, or if it's just kind of an eyeballed, scaled-down classic version.
Right. I do have the specs on the size.
Oh, you do?
It's 9 feet long. It's only 53 inches high. It has a 73-inch wheelbase, which just for a spoiler alert there, that's not exactly a standard thing.
No.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. And, you know, I started to get into kind of a short list of things that he had you had mentioned that he gathered up a lot of materials,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I mentioned the engine.
Mm-hmm.
He was using a homemade hacksaw that he had built out of a chair frame.
So, so cool.
Again, he built his own tools in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
He used a hammer and chisel. He had an arc welder, which was probably something he was just learning to use, I mean, early on.
Right.
And he used 9 refrigerators for the steel. Now, he used, you know, the doors mainly, I believe, is what he was going after. He said, you know, refrigerator doors are kind of his staple of steel.
Right.
In all of his cars, all the way through present day.
Because it's a super accessible way. Well, especially, you know, at that time, it mm-hmm. was a lot easier to find just a steel refrigerator that had been discarded. And he, funny story, this was still a learning experience for him. He didn't have the know-how to make what are called compound bends,
mm-hmm.
which is a skill you need to have when you're making your own cars. So instead, the story goes, he just used the bends that were already there in the refrigerator pieces. So he would find, I guess he would kind of like look for the part of the refrigerator that would fit the car and then cut it.
Well, that's probably why it took 9 refrigerators to do this, because
yeah.
he needed certain parts for certain things. Mm-hmm. And we'll find out that, you know, later, a lot of people describe the original dwarf car, the one that we're talking, the dwarf cruiser, I should say, as, in quotes, somewhat crude in the way
yeah.
it appears. Because later, as we get into some of the more of these cruisers, he's very, very refined and it becomes very complex in the way that
yeah.
he builds these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, this original one, again, I'll get off this one pretty soon, but it originally had solid rubber tires
Ooh.
Because they just weren't available in that size at that time. But later they did change them to 12-inch pneumatic tires, so a little more comfortable ride. He also later added a vinyl top and I think a 2-cylinder engine, a 2-cylinder 13-horsepower engine.
Yeah, so Onan.
Yeah, he swapped that one out for the Wisconsin engine that he had in there prior. It had a cloth interior, bucket seats, the windows operate, you know, so they can roll them up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And it still runs and drives today. It's still kept in running order in street legal conditions. So you can go to Ernie Adams Museum in, where is it, Maricopa,
mm-hmm.
Arizona, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
And you can see the Grandpa Dwarf alongside of the other 5 dwarfs that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Now I'll go ahead and tell you, they probably won't let you drive it. But you can ask.
You might as well ask. Why
yeah.
not? I mean, he may take it out and show you what it'll do, though, because all these things run and drive, and it seems like he often takes them out and kind of stretches their legs a little bit. You know,
right.
It's bad for these things to sit around and not be driven. So in his history, and I know we spent a little bit too much time on that one, but
no way.
It's That's strange cool. in that, you know, you have to go from the early years to the first dwarf car, then back to dwarf racing, and then
right.
back to dwarf cruisers again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on to dwarf car, and boy, it's tough for me to say, Ben, dwarf car racing.
Yes.
And the first dwarf race cars appeared in late 1979, early 1980.
Yep.
And the idea came from watching, he was watching a motorcycle sidecar race in mm-hmm. Phoenix with a
yeah.
friend.
Yeah, he was watching it with Darren Schmaltz, and as they were leaving, they started critiquing the race itself, and Ernie specifically said, well, these three-wheeled racers are a little too slow in the corners. What would happen if we added a fourth wheel?
Ah, see, Ben, now here's my theory about this whole
okay.
thing. These two guys are sitting around the racetrack watching a motorcycle sidecar race, having a couple beers, you know, maybe a corn dog or something like that.
Yeah.
What do they call them out there on Route 66? A cozy dog.
A cozy dog.
Having a cozy dog. and they're just relaxing, you know, on the grandstands, and they're kind of just big stuff talking, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, you know,
oh,
what
yeah.
to make this really cool? Here's what I would do with this series.
Yeah.
This is the way I would make these different. Mm-hmm. And then they started to kind of put this together, like, well, maybe we could really do this.
Yeah, it sounds like a big sort of a cocktail napkin type conversation.
It kind of does, but it turned out really well, as a lot of times those do.
Yeah.
And the thought was that the three-wheel race cars, or racers rather, these motorcycle sidecars were too slow in the corners for them, because remember, these are the original sidecars. They're not the
right.
ones that we see now that are exceedingly fast. The real, real low wide ones.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, you know, four wheels would be a little better for cornering speed, something like that. And a car body would add appeal for the crowd. So what we're talking about really is small cars.
Yeah. And, I'm glad you said it that way. Just another detail, I think they talked about the making an oval track, because
mm-hmm.
the sidecar races at that time were not in the oval.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And
okay.
So this is just a insight into how broadly they were speaking, because they said, you know, I can see it so clearly, Scott. It's like if you and I were sitting there watching a race, and then you said, well, you know, problem is they got three wheels. And I said, yeah. And the racetrack isn't even oval. What the heck, man?
Exactly.
We could do better than this.
We need to change this way, and it would yeah. be much better. So let's do it.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Yeah. They had a challenge to each other.
Yeah.
Eventually, after talking, such mess, as they would say in some parts of Tennessee, Schmaltz said, well, you know what, Ernie, if you build one of these, then I will build one too.
Mm-hmm. So they did. And in 1979, early 1980, they built a couple of these cars. That were the first two. Mm-hmm. And then by 1983, which is just 3 years later, it had kind of caught on enough that the county fair was actually sponsoring a race in Prescott, Arizona. And they had 12 cars registered for the first race. And I guess it was a big success, because people kind of stuck with it. They said, you know, this really works. Let's
mm-hmm.
hang on to it. And then here's what happened, Ben. Remember, this is where we go back to our other story.
Right.
And this will fill in the gap between the dwarf race cars and the dwarf car cruisers, because this is when the Lowe's Motor Speedway guys got involved. And the Lowe's Motor Speedway guys, the two involved in there, I've got them in my notes here in just a second. I'll find it.
Sure.
Humpy Wheeler.
Yeah.
And Elliot Forbes Robinson, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the Charlotte Motor Speedway. And they decided that they were going to start up this thing that they didn't know it was going to call it the Legends Car Series yet, but they were going to start up something that was like scaled down cars that were built for people who didn't have a whole lot of money but wanted to race.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so it's kind of an inexpensive way to get into racing. And we've told that whole story about, you know, how they did this. They bought four cars, I think, and they modified them a little bit.
Right. Okay. Added some fenders,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And, They wanted to have a fiberglass version.
Yeah,
too,
they tweaked the original design
yeah,
just a
that's
bit
good.
And
that's
made it work for their own series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they this whole thing came about, and then I think it was around 1992 when the original Legends car actually appeared first, like April, I think, of 92, when the first Legends car was revealed at the Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, did that change later to Lowe's Motor Speedway or something like that?
I think the name did change.
Yeah,
I believe you're right about
changed.
That.
I think I got that's the order I think it went from Charlotte to Lowe's. But then, okay, so Ernie in the early 1990s kind of gets out of the whole thing. He says,
yep.
you know, I'm done building these race cars because, you know, it's been taken over, and someone else is still building the original dwarf race cars, but I think they've moved to, oh, I want to say it's somewhere in Arizona. I want to say Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, I think it's Phoenix, because he has quite mm-hmm. a following in Phoenix and Prescott.
Okay, so I think they're still building the original dwarf race cars in Phoenix, Arizona, but Ernie kind of went out on his own, and he said, you know what, I'm done with this. I've sold the company or whatever, and I'm ready to move on. And he was probably, I mean, even at that time, getting a little bit old. He's an older guy.
Right.
He said, well, let's what I really want to do is I would like to start building some street legal classic cars, just scaled down classics, you know, the ones that you typically think of, you know, the 34 Ford or the 39 Chevy or whatever. Yeah. And he's got a whole list of cars here that we'll talk about, but, he started building these dwarf car cruisers that he called his masterpieces.
Ah, yes. And he's not calling them that sarcastically. Before we go on, I have to ask you, because we're going to start talking a lot about what these cars look like.
Mm-hmm.
And, Scott, we're going back to Ernie Adams' decision to get out of dwarf car racing and go just to building his masterpieces. Earlier, Scott, before the break, we mentioned that he had this list sort of dream cars. And the first car that he goes to after his racing days is a 39 Chevy Saturday Night Cruiser.
Yeah, he's got a 39 Chevy sedan. I hadn't heard the term Saturday Night Cruiser. That's cool, mm-hmm. Ben. But now the funny thing about this is that now, and understandably why he would go to this one, mm-hmm. he also owns a full-size 39 Chevy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's why he did this one. He said, well, I like that one so much, I'm going to mimic it for one of my masterpieces here, which mm-hmm. is what he first calls these. So it's really his second dwarf car cruiser, but his first masterpiece.
Right.
And he'll build many, many more after this. So not many, many, but a few more after this.
Sure. By hand too.
Yeah, exactly. All by hand. And, it took him 2.5 years to complete the 39 Chevy sedan. So you can see these are lengthy projects. I mean, mm-hmm. it's him working every single day in his barn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he builds everything. And when we say everything, I mean, he builds the spokes and the wheels. He builds mm-hmm. the wheels themselves, of course. He builds the steering wheel.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a bunch of space-age tools either.
No.
His only fabrication tools are, what, a torch? And he had a welder, a wire-feed welder.
Yeah, exactly. And he builds, I mean, you can watch the build process in a couple of different videos here and there. Oh, speaking of that, can I just mention this right now?
Yeah.
As we go down this list of four or five vehicles here, I have posted something at the Car Stuff Show blog site, I guess.
Yeah.
The website. And it's a blog post, and there's a couple of videos of Ernie and of his cars, and I think it was Vimeo that did a couple of little videos, and there's a YouTube video.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it just kind of teases, a potential possible coming, like a full presentation that they're going to do about Ernie Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of poked around for that, and I couldn't find that version, but what I did find was that there's a few different CDs on Ernie's site that shows how he builds these things.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can't watch them for free. You have to pay because these are, CDs that will be sent to you.
And they're full length.
Yeah, they're full length. They're about $12 each, and you can watch any one of these. There's three of them. There's one that's called Ernie Builds a Dwarf, which is, I think it's about 38 minutes. And these are in HD, by the way.
So nice.
They're brand new.
Nice.
The next one is called Half Moon Road, the Ernie Adams story, which is the whole background story. That's about 55 minutes long. And there's one called Route 66, Arizona Fun Run. And that's Ernie cruising on Route 66 in one of his cruisers. So, that one's about 24 minutes long. All those are about $12. They're on the site. I'm not selling them or anything like that. So don't get
right.
the wrong impression,
right.
but that's the only way you're going to really get to see Ernie build them outside of going to Maricopa and visiting Ernie and watching him build one, which, by the way, I don't think looking at all the stuff I've seen about Ernie and hearing everything about him, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah, he seems pretty cool. He might just say, yeah, come on.
He might say, step out to the barn and help me with this fender or whatever.
Especially if you meet him at one of the local Waffle Houses. He is like, did you read about that?
I did, yes.
He is famous at Waffle Houses throughout Arizona as well as his dwarf car cruisers.
His favorite restaurant, right? And everybody knows him at all the Waffle Houses in Arizona. That's such a weird thing to be known for, but.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what he is. He's a simple guy. He's got simple pleasures, right?
What we can say though about the kind of things that you will see on the CDs of his fabrication construction process, is that at least in the case of the 39 Chevy, he starts with photographs of the full size that it already has.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the measurements, from these photos and then he starts looking for donor cars,
mm-hmm.
which I still love that mentality where he says, well, if I don't need to make something out of whole cloth, because a lot of stuff that people might throw away nowadays in the modern age is still perfectly usable.
Yeah. Now, see, you said donor cars, but I think you meant donor items, maybe.
Or did
you
mean donor items is probably better.
Probably, because I still, you know what I read, Ben? I read that he's built six of these dwarf cruisers that we're going to talk about. He has still used refrigerator doors for every single dashboard in every single car he's ever built because he loves the metal that is in a refrigerator door. Mm-hmm. It's just for some reason he said it's the best metal. It bends the way you want it to. It stays where you put it. It's the perfect metal for him. So he says, you know, that one, I know when you said donor cars, maybe an item or two comes from one, but he adapts it in some way. He builds everything from scratch.
Now,
including the molding.
Well, yeah, when it comes to body, but you know that 39 Chevy has a drivetrain from a 1972 Toyota.
Yeah, so he's got some unusual drivetrains.
Yeah.
And, we'll talk about that also as we go through, because there's a few here that will surprise you. I think, the Toyota drivetrains are surprising. All right, so we've talked a little bit about the 39 Chevy sedan. By the way, that one, a lot of people say it's, in quotes here, a handsome car. A lot of people really like that one. And that was his first real attempt at a, what we call a masterpiece, or what he calls a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Kind of the most complete finished version of a dwarf car you can imagine, really.
Weighs much more than the Grandpa 2. The Grandpa Dwarf, that 28 Chevy, was 900 pounds, and this one is 1,770.
I mean, as far as complexity goes, the 39 Chevy sedan, if somebody wasn't standing next to it, you wouldn't realize that that's a dwarf car.
Absolutely.
The 28 Grandpa Dwarf, although it looks correct, it has more of the look of, let's say, one of those cars that you would find like on the kid tracks at Cedar Point or something. You
right,
know, the kind that kids can get in and drive on the rail, that type of car, has that appearance. And maybe it's just because of the style of vehicle it is.
Well, but you can see some cool stuff where he has, I think it's the 39, right? Aren't there photos of the 39, the full scale and the dwarf together?
There are, yes. Yeah. Those are great photos, by the way. I mean, with him standing there, and that gives you a true scale of what's going on, because the 39 sedan's pretty big.
Yeah.
The Chevy sedan, rather. But when he's standing next to them, that's when you get a true appreciation for the scale of these things, how small they are, because these are waist-high cars, Ben. They're like, they're maybe 45 inches tall at the most. So they're remarkably small, remarkably well done, remarkably detailed. Mm-hmm. And the next one that he built was a 42 Ford convertible. So he took on a convertible project, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Of course, how hard is it for this guy to build a convertible system for a car when he's building a full car, really? Mm-hmm. Now he was, inspired or prompted by others to keep building these cruisers. Once he built the 39 Chevy, they said, well, clearly you're really good at this. You've got amazing skills. Keep going with this as long as you can. So he decided to build this 42 Ford convertible, and it's 46 inches high. Mm. It's baby blue. I think it goes by the name of Gem, I think, is that the one he calls it. Huge hit. People love that car. Then he went on to build a car that, I'll tell you, Ben, this is my least favorite of all of them, I think.
Oh, okay.
The 1929 Ford Hillbilly car.
The Hillbilly Dwarf.
Now, just to give you an idea, now he takes years, like 2.5, 3 years to build the other cars.
Right.
He built this one in something like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I know he must love it. I mean, that's why he did it. But they say that you have to see it to believe it, because it was inspired by a car that he saw at a show in Casa Grande, Arizona. Again, it took 3 months to build.
Yeah.
It required several antiques to complete the build. So he's taking antiques of other kinds, like milk jugs and, looks like he's got old birdhouses and stuff like that attached to it. It's, I don't know. It's kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies type car.
Right.
Sort of.
It is similar. And a lot of that, according to, and this is from one of his proper websites, when he was in Casa Grande, he met a guy named Zeke who already had two Hillbilly Model A's.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he kind of became infatuated with the aesthetic of this. And I don't think you're off base at all to call it kind of a Beverly Hillbillies car, because that's sort of what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's still got a two-cylinder Onan motor, or it did originally, right?
Yeah, they switched it over to a big four-cylinder.
With a whopping 13 horsepower.
Yeah, that's right, from an American Austin. So they did swap that one. So he does a lot of motor swapping and things like that. I think he might refine these a little bit as we go. Like, remember, from the hard rubber tires to the pneumatic tires and stuff like that. But if you have
three different horns,
I would guess. Yeah, that's a good example, Ben. They're probably all mounted to the hood somewhere.
Oh,
right?
I hope so.
Yeah. So you like this one.
I like it. I don't think if I had to pick one, this would not be the one that I picked as my favorite. It's more of a, to me, to be absolutely candid, especially in comparison to some of the other ones, this is a little bit more art than it is car.
That's kind of the way I felt as well. Cause it's just, I mean, if you look at it, and you do have to see it to believe it. I mean, it's on the, art car type of vehicle line, I guess.
And yeah.
You know, there's just stuff welded to it all over the place. Like I mentioned, milk cans and birdhouses and I don't know, horns that you mentioned.
It has a stove. It has a heating stove.
Yeah.
In the back seat.
Suitcase for a trunk, of course, you know, things like that. There's just a lot of, rust and clutter on this car. And I know that's the style, this hillbilly car style. I guess it's kind of like, you know, there's the rat rod style. There's the classic rod style. There's the hillbilly style, I guess. I don't know.
This car would look just as normal in, you know, 1930s or 40s Appalachia as it would at Burning Man today. It has a moonshine still on it, which I'm not a police officer or a lawyer myself. I don't know how that interacts with open container laws.
That's an authentic moonshine still.
Yeah,
it's I don't know if it truly works or not, but apparently at one time it did. All right, so let's move on from the 1929 Ford Hillbilly car.
This is a big one.
I think this is a big one. This is the one that seems to get all the press, and maybe that's just because this is when all the focus was on Ernie, I guess, when Vimeo went out and did their little video shoot and which was really, really cool, by the way.
It is beautiful.
And that's the one that's on our blog site.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, when he was showing up to different cruising events and things like that, this is the vehicle he's driving. It was the 1949 Mercury Dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably, I don't know, this is my favorite car of the whole bunch, I think.
I thought you might say that.
I think it is.
It's modeled, the 49 Mercury, of course, you'll recognize that design from Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah.
So Ernie had really enjoyed this vehicle, story goes, for decades. He loved this because he especially loved its grill, the unique three-piece window, and he thought the 49 was much better looking than the 50 or 51 Mercury.
Mm-hmm. And this one is authentic. I mean, it has the lake pipes. It has, you know, the great big sun visor that goes over the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's been nosed and decked, which means just taking the trim off of the nose and the back end.
Right.
So, you know, a few hot rod elements. It's been lowered, apparently. It looks really low.
Yeah.
I think he's headed up to 100 miles per hour before. That's the top speed of this thing. Now, it took him 5 years, Ben. It took him 5 years to build this car. So this is by far to date, as far as I know, this is the longest build for the 1949 Mercury, and I think it shows in all the details. I mean, it's obviously running and driving still.
Right.
He's taken it to cruise events. He goes around all over the place and gets a huge crowd gathering when he takes this thing
anywhere. It's called the Rebel Rouser.
Yeah, the Rebel Rouser, which is a cool name. Of course, you know, from the James Dean movie, the Devil Without a Cause. I'm sorry, Rebel Without a Cause.
Mm.
Did I say Devil Without a Cause?
That's a Devil Without a Cause.
That's a Kid Rock album.
Is it really?
Yeah, sure. All right. So anyways, a little slip there, but, the Rebel Without a Cause movie, started the build in September of 2004, went all the way through 2009 when he finished it. Now it's, as he says, it's solid as the original would be. It's a very, very sturdy car. Turquoise paint has flamethrowers on it as well. So he's got a lot of, you know what he says flamethrowers somewhere. I read flamethrowers somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I've also seen that it has flames painted on the hood. I wonder if that's being confused somewhere, because flamethrower exhaust is something completely different.
Right, yeah.
And I wonder if somebody confused the flames on the hood with flamethrower exhaust.
That's an easy mistake to make, but I would much, much prefer the flamethrower exhaust.
Oh, so would I. I think so. That's such a cool thing. So, and that's not his last car that he's built, though. And this is only to date. Just after that, I guess he worked on a 34 Ford sedan.
Right, yeah. Two-door, and a lot of people will associate this with Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have the famous death car, which I believe we've talked about in an earlier episode.
Yeah, I think we have.
So, of course, you know, Bonnie and Clyde met their end in a 1934 Ford sedan, just riddled with bullet holes, looked like Swiss cheese at the end.
And this one doesn't have the big V8 in it, obviously. There's just not enough room for it. It has another unusual drivetrain. It has the Toyota 4KE engine with a 5-speed transmission. And you may think that sounds funny, but the way he ports this thing and exhausts it and everything, it's not going to sound like a Toyota when it's finished. It's going to sound like a 34 Ford sedan when he's done. I mean, like the 49 Mercury has, even though that has a Toyota engine, it's got the lake pipes and it's probably not muffled in any way.
Right.
It sounds like a 49 Mercury when it fires up, or it's similar anyways. It doesn't have, you know, what you would think of like a, I guess a compact car sound or anything like
that. No, it sounds like it's swinging above its weight class.
It really does. It's definitely a good sound. So don't worry about, if you're worried about the Toyota engine in this thing, other than, you know, I guess historical accuracy, which you just can't do in something this small, it shouldn't be of a concern.
Yeah. And I want to go ahead and add that, to date, this was by no means meant to be his last vehicle.
No. This just means that, you know,
the last one completed.
Yeah, the last one completed. The last one you can go to the museum and see, and who knows what he's working on right now in his garage. I mean,
surely something.
I hope he is. I really do. I hope he is still. But it's a bare steel body, which I love, Ben, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's got light rust on it, which is intended to give the car kind of a barn find feel. It's not completely rusted, just real light rust. And, of course, being in the Southwest, he's got the advantage there.
He can
maintain it exactly how he wants it.
It's so dry.
Exactly. And, of course, the rustic appearance I mentioned. But suicide doors, it's got a louvered hood. Mm-hmm. It's got that long, slanted grille. You know, it's all chrome, of course. Beautiful front end.
Mm-hmm.
Roll-up windows, as all of his cars have. Hand-crank roll-out windshield, like the old Fords had.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting hood ornament, too.
Yeah, it does. It's something that did he craft that himself? Did he find it?
I think he found it. It's a 1935 Auburn Flying Lady.
Oh, okay. Well, then he found it. Yeah. That's a found part. The way this one came about is, I guess he saw somebody with a 34 Ford sedan that matched this one at a show, and Ernie walked up to the guy, and it was in this condition, like you would see this one, and he said, "I really hope you don't finish this car," meaning that, you know, "I hope you don't put any kind of like glossy paint on it, make it a hot rod or whatever."
Yeah.
And the guy said, "It's finished." And he said, "Well, it's beautiful the way it is. You know, just leave it the way it is. It's beautiful." And that's when he went to work on this 34 Ford sedan of his own. And he modeled it right after that one that he found.
That's just so inspiring. I want to also point out one thing that's important to remember is that, as I believe we said this earlier, Scott, but just in case we haven't, all of these cars are street legal. That's right. The Hillbilly is street legal. You don't want to take him on the interstate.
Well, he has, though. He has, though, because the 49 Mercury, now he's driven that from Phoenix all the way to Fairmount, Indiana.
Well, yeah, the Mercury is fine. Yeah.
Oh, the Mercury is fine. Sure.
I mean, I think the Hillbilly tops out at 35 miles.
I didn't mean to step on you with that one. I thought you were talking about all these cars, because he does take them on the highway sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And they're fine on the highway, especially that Mercury.
But the Hillbilly, no way.
Yeah, the Hillbilly's just a little bit slow, but that's because it's supposed to be built on that older idea.
Understood. Yeah, you're going to start losing parts like birdhouses and things. Yeah, so he's got, as a matter of fact, that 49 Mercury has something like 30,000 miles on the odometer at this point. So, you know, he's running and driving these things every chance he gets. He takes them to car shows. He goes to cruising events. He cruises them on Route 66 when he can.
Yeah.
He's even, you know, made these, you know, cross-state tours, as I mentioned, you know, from Phoenix to Fairmont for, I think it was something called the James Dean run that he attended, of course, with that car. You know, you can ask him about, you know, buying these cars. If you're at the museum, you can say, because a lot of people offer large sums of money for them, because he's got all of them on display at this museum in Maricopa. You can go see them anytime you want, and you can go to the museum website, which I think was just dwarfcarmuseum.com, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's off the top of my head.
You're right. Dwarfcarmuseum.com.
Okay. And then there's also dwarfcarpromotions.com. Mm-hmm. And that's got a lot of background information on Ernie and the photos and everything. Mm-hmm. But you can't buy the cars. He will not sell them. He says he's way too proud of them to ever get rid of them. He loves them.
Yeah.
But you can buy some dwarf car merchandise when you're there. So you can buy things like shirts and window stickers and DVDs. And they even have trading cards, Ben. Dwarf car cruiser trading cards. So that's kind of cool. And the funny thing is that if you go, this is such kind of a small town thing, really, you know, he's, I guess, in this really little town there, and so accessible that his email's right online, his phone number's right online. You can contact Ernie and talk to him if you want to, and I'll let you dig up that information. I'm not going to give it here.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, you can find ways to contact Ernie, and you can go out there and make a trip and, you know, see him and talk to him and kind of pal up with him, I guess, for a little while and see what's going on. Maybe he'll give you a ride in one. Who knows?
What I think this is an amazing person.
Yeah.
This is really cool.
I can't guarantee a ride in that or anything like
that. No. Car Stuff does not legally guarantee rides with any living legends.
No, that's true. But he is definitely what I would call a living legend because he has got, you know, before I said he's a simple man with simple pleasures, right? With the whole Waffle House thing, right?
Right.
This guy is unbelievably skilled, Ben. When you see what he does, when you see what he makes out of really nothing, out of other people's scrap, this guy is, far, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else, as far as I'm concerned, with fabrication and just the way he builds things is so amazing. Like, he has a vision and he makes it all happen.
Yeah, definitely, definitely a master in my book. So I guess that's all I have on Ernie Adams, other than go see him if you're in the area. Go check out this museum.
Yeah, and I hope this is a story that continues. I hope that, you know, past that 34 Ford that, you know, he just put together, I hope that, you know, we see another 5-6 cars come out of Ernie. I mean, he's an older guy. And these take like 5 years to build, 3 years to build, whatever it is. So, you know, it's kind of limited in the number that he can produce, but I hope he continues to build, you know, right up to the point where he can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that, I know for a fact that he's inspired other people to build their own dwarf cars as well. So, that's how you know that you're really leaving a legacy. Let's see, before we head out here, Scott, do you want to do a little listener mail?
I'd love to do that.
So, Tracy B. writes to us and says, "Hello, Scott and Ben. I heard you say recently that a Hemi episode was on the way. I wanted to make sure the Ford Boss 429 wasn't overlooked. I'm guessing Chrysler has such a lock on the name Hemi now that they'll probably make me pay for each time I type it. However, there was a time Ford was in the game, too. Hate to see Ford Motor Company go unmentioned. As for the folks that thought Preston Tucker got too much airtime versus Henry Ford, wah, Ford may have been around first, but Tucker had more story. I loved it. Tracy. P.S. Mid-grade gas is still a ripoff," says Tracy B.
And you probably agree.
You know what? I might get skewered for this one. I agree, but I use it in the Monte Carlo.
Oh, no, Ben. I agree. It's a ripoff as well.
It's a superstition at this point, but I just use it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll let you continue spending extra money at the pump every time you go if you want to.
Okay. Here's the worst part. If I'm low on money trying to cut corners financially, then I do put just regular in there. So I know that it is. I know. Okay. I get it.
Ben,
I know it's
your car. Your car is rated for regular gas. It's not rated for premium. If you're rated for premium and you're putting mid-grade in, I would understand that you're cutting corners, but this is just spending extra money you don't have to. If it's rated for regular, put in regular.
What cost can you put on peace of mind?
Okay, good point. I guess.
I mean, that's such a question, Dodge.
I don't know.
No, it is. You know what? I know the arguments. I will say you've probably heard this story before. This is just an interesting one. Way back in when my parents were kids in Tennessee, one of the only gas stations up on the mountain had those three pumps. So you could get your regular, you get your. I think they didn't have mid grade. I think they had regular, premium, and diesel. Right.
Okay.
So the shop closes down, and there's a fire. You know, years after it's closed, and so people. Like, firefighters come, the building's destroyed, and so that sort of spurs development, and they break in, they start breaking ground to build something else there, and they find that the premium and the regular came from the same tank.
No kidding.
No difference. That guy was ripping people off for decades.
There was no separate tank for mixing or anything.
None of it.
Nothing.
It was just one tank that you paid extra for on that side. No, there was a diesel tank.
So there's diesel, and then there's regular gas. And he's getting two different types of gas out of that one gas tank.
Oh, no, it was the same gas, man. He was just ripping people off.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, he's somehow changing the,
magic tank.
I get it. So thank you, Tracy, for that. And I agree. Preston had a lot of story. Henry Ford also had a lot of story.
Oh, yeah.
And we should talk about the Boss 429.
We should. I think that's a really good point, and wanted to get that on the air before our Hemi episode, which will surely be world famous.
Yeah, whenever we get around to it, because that's on a long, long list of listener suggestions. So it's there. We're working on it. We'll get to it, I promise, because the Hemi story is a good story as well.
Yes. And if you would like to learn more about Ernie and the dwarf car phenomenon, go ahead and visit carstuffshow.com, where you can check out our blog on this. You can even see a few videos that you and I made back in the day, Scott. And you can listen to all of our podcasts. And if you want to suggest an upcoming topic for us, here's what you do. Just hop on your computer and send us an email directly. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.